Welcome to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
Past and present leaders at the Homeland Security Department have compared DHS's maturity at age 15 to that of a teenager. The DHS Office of Inspector General has witnessed this firsthand. IG John Roth looks annually at the management challenges facing the department. He tells Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco about the biggest challenge DHS continues to face year after year.
I think the most obvious one, and the one that people you probably hear a lot, is ensuring that the various components within DHS act as a single unified federal agency. DHS was created for that purpose, to put all of the sort of homeland security enterprise into one cabinet-level department. The difficulty, of course, with that is they came from different places with different cultures, with different styles, with different missions. To try to mash all those together in, in sort of government terms, 15 years is a very short period of time. So that is a continuous challenge that we have seen really throughout all the programs and operations in DHS. So that would be, I would say, the major challenge that DHS faces that's probably unique compared to, say, HHS or other agencies. The second issue that we see sort of that is persistent and recurring is a challenge to make sure that the business fundamentals of DHS are taken care of. And what we mean by that is DHS has had continual problems in collecting the right kinds of data to make sure that they understand what problem it is that they're trying to address, making fact-based decisions based on the data that they receive, and then having some kind of performance measurement to see whether or not the kind of work that they're doing makes sense. We've had a number of examples of that throughout DHS programs and operations that illustrate that issue.
Can you give an example of where you see that?
Sure. I mean, one of the reports that we had recently done, which is, frankly, quite horrifying, is the deportation operations for ICE. ICE has deportation officers, but the workload of those deportation officers is wildly disparate depending on where they happen to be. So in some places, for example, for a non-detained docket, a deportation officer would have to supervise up to 10,000 people. And if you're trying to supervise 10,000 people, these are people who are released pending a deportation order. If you have to supervise 10,000 people, effectively you're supervising no one. But until we asked that question and started looking at the data, I don't think anyone actually saw that that was the case. Likewise, in the immigration context, this idea of what is the problem with immigration? How is it that people are coming into the country? There hasn't been the kind of thorough analysis, I think, that would allow for intelligent decision making as to the proper road forward. One of the ways that CBP, for example, measures influx, illegal inflows, is the number of people that they catch, which is sort of an odd kind of a metric when you think about it.
It's interesting that you bring up that specific example, because I'm pretty sure in recent months I've actually heard about DHS working on a consolidated immigration database, I guess, so that I think they could particularly respond to information requests from the Hill, about how many people are coming in, going out. Is the department in a position to collect that information and really organize it in a way so that they can make decisions, or is that still an ongoing area for them?
I think it's very much still a work in progress. I acknowledge that, in fact, that they are making progress in that area, and I think it's important to do so. But when you think about 15 years after the creation of DHS, that, a fundamental and basic performance measure, how many illegal folks are coming into the country, we still don't have a good handle on. So, kudos for starting to try to do that. But there are other examples. For example, they have the Streamline program, which is a criminal enforcement program for individuals crossing the border illegally. They don't have good metrics as to what kind of a deterrent that is. And given the costs that are involved, both the cost to DHS as well as justice and the prison system, it would be useful to have those kinds of metrics, but they still don't.
When you're in a situation like that where you need to evaluate the department's data collection, I mean, how do you, if they don't have the data organized and available in a way that they can make decisions, how do you address that? I mean, that seems like that could be an issue. If they can't do it, how can you do it?
Well, precisely. And in some instances, we simply don't try. In other instances, we do try to take some kind of performance measure. The best example of that is the unmanned aerial vehicle program. They didn't have any performance metrics out there. So we devised a few that seemed reasonable. For example, a number of aliens identified and, you know, apprehended as a result of the program. I mean, there are obvious ones that we can at least suggest and then measure against. But you're absolutely right. One of the fundamental things of any government program is that they have to understand what success looks like, and they have to have an obligation for justifying what it is that they're doing.
That's John Roth, DHS Inspector General, speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco. I'm Tom Temin.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
John Roth, DHS Inspector General, speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco.
So let's move on to another kind of major issue that we all at least are aware of at the department, and that's the acquisition process. I know that this has been really an ongoing area for the department. They've really tried, at least, you know, from our perspective, and I would say maybe from industries as well, to improve just how they're dealing with acquisition contracting, trying to make decisions as a department about what the department needs, not about what each individual component needs. From your assessment, I mean, how are they doing with that? Are you seeing improvements?
Last year in our major management challenges, we talked about the fact that they now have, for example, an acquisition review board. They have a joint requirements council. Those things had existed on paper before. But in the last 3 years, they had been really invigorated, thanks, frankly, to significant leadership attention to it. And without that kind of leadership attention, it's simply going to be words on paper and honored more in the breach than in reality. So we give them great credit for standing that back up, putting a rational system back in place where these things get examined. The question moving forward is whether there's a sustained leadership commitment to the doing that kinds of things. One of the things that we did was take a look at the process that they're using for the Southwest Border Barrier, for example. One of the things that I've tried to do is do early warning audits, take a look at things before the completion of whatever project it is to try to get a sense of whether or not they're on track. So we have done a quick look at what they're doing and their processes that are in place for the Southern Border Barrier. And, you know, frankly, we gave them pretty good marks for being able to do that. So we give them credit there. I think they're on the right track with regard to major acquisitions. Now, the sub-$300 million acquisitions, that's very much not part of that process, and I think there is a lot of room for improvement there.
You brought up the workforce as it relates to acquisition, but I wondered if we could take a look at it a little bit more broadly. I know that DHS has really been trying to... they've been looking at innovative ways that they can bring people on more quickly, more easily, especially as it relates to their IT workforce.
Right.
From your perspective, how's that going? How are they doing? Are they, you know, are they able to bring on people more quickly? Are they able to bring on the people that they need? I know that each area is different, but from that broader perspective, how's it going?
Right. I mean, a couple things with regard specifically to that IT workforce. Congress has given flexibilities to DHS that a lot of other agencies don't have, and what the Chief Human Capital Officer has done is engage in a number of job fairs, these one-stop shop kinds of places where you don't have that significant delay and the kind of sort of bureaucratic hurdles that is, you know, unfortunately typical in federal hiring. Now, we haven't done an audit to measure that, and we don't know sort of over the long term whether or not this is going to fix the problem. But as you indicate, you know, creativity is important, and I think that's very useful. With regard to the hiring surge, for example, for Border Patrol, They've gotten some flexibilities from the White House to be able to hire without some of the normal sort of constraints. So we will take a look at that at some point to see whether or not that has created greater efficiencies.
You brought up the Border Patrol workforce, and I remember your office did a really interesting report on the president's executive orders as it related to hiring Border Patrol agents. You had some really interesting findings about whether or not, one, they could do it as the process exists now, and I think you pretty much said that they can't, and two, whether or not they have the capacity, the systems in place to meet that surge that the president is asking for. As this continues to go along, as the department continues to put, the pieces in place of that executive order, how is your office going to look at that and, specifically as it relates to the workforce hiring piece?
Yeah, absolutely. And the third point behind that audit report, which I think was equally interesting, is that there's no staffing plan. They've really taken this, and if you look at sort of hiring a huge chunk of people as an acquisition, they've really turned it on its head, which is, typically in an acquisition, you have some sort of requirements, you have a need, and then you have an analysis about the best way to fill that need, and then you sort of execute on whatever that plan is. Here we had a plan, which was to hire X number of Border Patrol agents without any of those intermediate steps. What was the need? How is it that you were going to fill that need? Does this all make sense? So one of the things that we're very concerned about is, even if you resolve all those other issues that we talk about, what I talk about is the funnel, making the funnel bigger, making it more efficient, doing those kinds of things. Where are those people going to go? And are they really truly necessary to fix the problem that we see? So, we will continue to look at this. The audit report that you talked about was a first look, sort of an early warning audit, lessons learned. And what I challenge my staff to do is, let's take a look at all the audits we've done over the last few years and figure out what are the recurring themes in these kinds of issues, and then let the department know, look, these are the traps that you need to look out for as you move forward.
That's John Roth, DHS Inspector General, speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco. In part two of their interview, Roth discusses the department's ongoing push to improve employee engagement. We'll post a link to the entire interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One. I'm Tom Temin.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
Employee engagement at the Homeland Security Department is finally on the rise after 6 years at the bottom. DHS boosted employee engagement by 4% on the 2017 Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. John Roth is the DHS Inspector General. He tells Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco about the steps the department still has to take to grow and mature an engaged workforce.
I can say, as a 32-year veteran in the federal workforce, a lot of employee satisfaction engagement depends on who your boss is and, what kind of work they're asking you to do and how they treat you as an employee. And again, we are not a mature organization. DHS is not a mature organization. And as we mature and we grow the kinds of mid-tier leaders that we need who can take care of the workforce, I think ultimately the scores will go up. But it's not a magic bullet that, in 2 years we're going to have a 10-point increase. There's things that you can do, and I think that there are things that the department is doing. We give them credit for doing those kinds of things, listening to the workforce, understanding exactly what roles leaders play in ensuring an engaged workforce, ensuring integrity in hiring and promotions and compensation and those kinds of things. Very important at the end of the day for employee engagement. And the department's doing all those things, but there isn't going to be a magic bullet, and they're just going to have to grind it out over time.
One area that I know that we definitely should tackle here is IT and cybersecurity posture. DHS obviously plays a pretty critical role in the government-wide view of cybersecurity, but also, you know, it has its own issues with its own IT infrastructure. So wondering if you could kind of give us that look at, you know, how the department itself is doing with its own IT improvements, if any have been made at all.
Sure. I mean, one of the issues, particularly with cybersecurity, is the number of legacy systems within DHS. And that's something that simply you're going to have to grow out of. You're going to have to invest out of. So if you have a multi-billion dollar system that you're mission dependent on, you can't stop using it. Yet it's insecure, and everyone understands that it's insecure. It's going to take a multi-year program to be able to acquire new technology that will eliminate those vulnerabilities, which of course gets into IT acquisition, which the department has a very mixed record on. But I will give them credit for trying. I mean, there have been a number of sprints, cyber sprints, that have occurred over the last couple of years. For example, to ensure two-factor authentication on every machine, that's pretty much now a given. You know, when I came here from the Food and Drug Administration 3.5 years ago, I was shocked that my machine was Windows XP and I had no two-factor authentication. I mean, in the two previous agencies I worked in, that was just a given that you'd have more up-to-date operating software and two-factor authentication. But again, some of it is about, you know, investing in IT in a smart way. So in some ways, we're going to acquire our way to a more secure posture. And then the other thing I would say is that the lack of sort of consistency in the CIO position has hurt the department. Having a strong CIO, now that we have some of the authorities that I think are necessary for the CIO to have a seat at the table, to understand some of the investments that these program offices are making, I think is very important. So we get the right CIO in there. He has time to sort of enforce some of the rules. Hopefully we can make some progress in that area.
You've mentioned a few times now the fact that DHS is a relatively immature agency. It's only 15 years old. Each of those components have their own history and culture associated with it. Is that a mindset that you bring into your reports? And just when you look at these different issues, is that something that you consider and think about? You know, well, they're only 15 years old, but is that a mindset that you bring when you look at some of these issues? Or is it really a standard is a standard and we need to hold them to those?
Well, certainly if we do an audit and we have a finding, our findings are our findings. And, you know, we are obligated to adhere to professional auditing standards when it comes to that. Now, when it comes to recommendations, I think it's very important to understand what the capacity of each individual component is to be able to get someplace. It's not a good idea to have an unrealistic recommendation. So we have to sort of understand where they are and where they're going to be able to sort of key in recommendations that make sense and are helpful.
I wanted to quickly ask about your office and how it's changed since you've been there for about 3.5 years, you know, what the staffing looks like, the workload, et cetera. You know, do you have the staff that you need to handle the workload that you have?
Sure. Well, we've been very fortunate in the last 3 years that both Congress and the administration have recognized the value of independent oversight that NIG brings. So we have had year-on-year budget increases. So in the last 3 years, probably a cumulative 20 or 25% increase, both in budget as well as FTE manpower. So I've been very fortunate and very grateful that people look at our operation and think that it adds value. As I tell people, you know, talk is cheap, but if they're willing to invest, that certainly is probably a good indicator that we're on the right track. So, you know, no one's ever going to say that they have enough, and we are perfectly linear. So the more resources that we have, the better we can sort of manage the risk of the department and understand the risk of the department. As I like to say, you know, we have a pretty good budget, but it's only 1/4 of 1% of the DHS budget. So what I consistently try to talk to people about is making sure that we're doing the right work. So we're looking at the risks that we think are the greatest risks to the department, with a particular eye on unknown risks, risks that haven't been addressed or haven't even been seen by department leadership. And I think that's very important to try to prevent sort of nasty surprises from coming up.
Yeah, looking ahead to the future, I mean, where do you think those risks might come from if you can predict that? And just looking ahead to the future, I mean, where do you see your office playing a role? I mean, you know, the department itself has a lot of responsibility, and it seems as if it's getting more under this administration.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge challenge because it's a continuously moving target. And you are right, the department is being asked to do more in a what's relatively flat budget environment. You know, and there are risks everywhere we look, right? I mean, there are risks in disaster preparedness. There are risks in disaster response, in aviation security. Really, everywhere we look, we see risks. So, you know, one of the things that I try to do is let's be smart about this. Let's focus our limited resources where we can. So to that end, we've put together a couple different kinds of projects. We have, for example, an enterprise risk identification and management team whose job it is basically to be a think tank, to think about risk that the department faces and whether or not the OIG is looking at those risks in an intelligent way. So to be able to focus our audit efforts. And we also have something called the Special Review Group, which is brand new, which is a very sort of small team that'll go in and take a look at an issue in a very short time frame. You know, we're talking weeks, you know, 3, 4, 6 weeks to look at an issue and issue a report, particularly on a fast-moving project. Doesn't really do us a lot of good if we do an audit and the audit takes 9 months. And we can say, well, 9 months ago, this was the state of affairs. Sometimes the department or the Hill needs information right now. And so we wanted to develop a team that was more responsive, sort of a rapid sort of response kind of a mechanism.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I know that that is a common complaint, at least from the agency side, that an agency issues an IG report and it's based on information that is 2, 3 years, maybe even more. It's old information. And the news story comes out about it, the media talks about it, and you know, the agency that says, well, you know, this is old information. Here's the things that we've been doing since then. So is that kind of a response to that criticism?
It is. But I would say that, you know, the question is, well, why did the agency change? And a lot of times the agency changed because we initiated an audit and we started to uncover some issues and they realized that, you know, there was some work here to be done. But I would also say that if there's an audit report that has 3 or 4 year old information that's inaccurate, then that's a poor audit report. I mean, we have an obligation under our audit standards, under our professional auditing standards, to ensure that whatever report we write reflects the current sort of state of affairs. And that's something that we certainly try to emphasize. And one of the things that I focus on as the leader of the organization is what the department's response is to any draft audit. So one of the first things I look at is, well, what does the department say about this? And are we accurately reflecting their response in our audit report? Because I think that's very important.
That's John Ross, DHS Inspector General, speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco. There's more to the interview. We'll post it all at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes and Podcast One. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos, on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search DHS-15.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
At Aetna, we know that all federal employees aren't the same. Each has different interests, family situations, and health needs. We get federal employees, so go to AetnaFeds.com. There you'll find plans with low premiums, plans with low out-of-pocket costs, and a national PPO network of doctors and hospitals. There's a plan that rewards wellness activities, and even plans with built-in dental and vision. Get the health plan that gets you at AetnaFeds.com. Health benefits and health insurance plans are offered by Aetna Life Insurance Company and its affiliates. Plans contain exclusions and limitations.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for November is March of Dimes. Every new parent dreams of bringing their baby home for the first time, but some babies are born too sick or too soon to come home right away. That's why the March of Dimes, the leading nonprofit organization for pregnancy and baby health, is funding life-saving research and programs. Join the March of Dimes in helping to give every baby a fighting chance so that more babies can come home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.org.